My name is Brad, and I'm the middle school pastor. I'm glad you guys are here. So we have been talking about this idea of looking up for the past couple weeks, and last week we continued and got a little bit more specific about what it is we're looking up to and looking up for, because we talked about in the very beginning, the very first week, Psalm, anybody remember the number? Psalm what? It's three numbers, but one of them repeats. Yeah, 121. A leader got it. Cheater, but not really. Psalm 121, we're looking, and it's the first two verses, we're looking up. Because God is going to help us. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the gist of these verses, talking about our help's going to come from the Lord. And that's our goal, is to look up to find our help. It's not just to stay focused on our circumstances, the thing that we're in that's really dragging us down, stressing us out, causing us sadness, anger, pain, whatever the case may be. We want to shift our perspective up. And then when we look up, we're not just looking up for something random, just looking and like, what's it going to be? And you look and you see a cloud that looks like the shape of a bunny, and you're like, oh, what does that mean? A bunny. I need to jump. I don't know. Like, you're not looking for something random in the clouds. Like, you're not looking for just anything. You're specifically looking to this light, this Jesus. And so last week, we used this analogy of light because the Bible uses this analogy of light. I did that last week. I said 1 John, and I was about to do it again, but I'm not going to say it. John 1, the first chapter of John, the first several verses, talks about this light coming into the world, and we realize as we kept researching that Jesus is this light. So, Bailey, cue my light. We've got this light in a dark world that we are looking to for our help. So it's shining out in the darkness. This darkness on the stage you see right now is basically what we live in. It's a lot of our lives. We've got junk going on in our life. We see junk going on around our life. But in the midst of that, if we actually look for it, we will see a light. And when we look up and we are looking for help in times of trouble, we will find a light. And that light is Jesus, the way he lived his life. We went through what his life looked like, and it was just like this. It was a light shining in the darkness. There was junk going on all around. There was religious people that were acting hypocritical and causing people to feel shame and to turn away from God. But Jesus comes on the scene, and he flips all that on his head, and he tries to redirect everybody's focus from all the stuff that people have been focused on, which was religion and rules and all of these things. And Jesus is like, no, that's not who God is about. That's not what God is about. He is about loving you, and he's about grace, and he is about you understanding who I am and how I'm living. And so when he does this, he serves people, and he loves people, and he forgives people, and he helps people who have been blinded by religion to see that they have been living for the wrong thing. It's not actually God they've been living for. They've been living for rules. They've been living for the right to say that they were right and they were righteous. And it turns out that you can't be righteous because only God is righteous. So he shines in the darkness because he's so different than any one of us. Because he has no sin, he was perfect, he never did anything wrong ever, which is exactly the opposite of every single person in this building, in this county, in this state, in this continent, and in this world. Not only now, but that's ever lived and that ever will live. Jesus is the only one. And so we got to talk about his life in general and what it looked like last week. And it was very much like this light in the darkness. All right, Bailey, we can bring him back up. We'll come back to the light in just a minute. But tonight, it's going to be... So last week was awesome, man. I mean, we got to go through a list of all these cool things Jesus did, all the things he said. And it wasn't even all the things. It was just like some of the cool things that stood out about his life, just to kind of help us get this picture of who he is, to help us get this light. Because if we're looking for help and we see the light, what's the light all about? Well, it's about Jesus. It's about his life and what he did and how he lived and what he said. So we tried to kind of go through some of the big points of that last week. And it was awesome, man. It was a good night because it's all good things. How do you not get fired up about Jesus bringing people back to life that were dead? How do you not get fired up about Jesus spitting on mud and putting in people's eyes and them not getting mad at him? I mean, that's just fun, cool stuff to talk about. Jesus walked on water for 3 or 4 miles. That's crazy. Let's talk about that some more. Well, tonight, after 3 years of Jesus doing all these awesome things, we get to this point that he's been trying to let his disciples in on for a long time. He's been like, guys, hey, this thing's coming. I'm going to leave you soon. I'm going to actually be torn down very soon. Like, I'm going to die soon. It's going to happen. And his disciples didn't know what to do with that information. It's like, what are you talking about? Because he would say things like the temple was going to be torn down and destroyed, but then it was going to be rebuilt. Then the place I'm going, I'm going to prepare a place for you. And you'll know the way. Like, he's saying all these different things to them that's kind of like, what? Don't leave. Like, dude, you've been doing all these crazy cool things, and we've been able to see it and be a part of it and walk around with you and learn from you. You can't leave. But part of why Jesus is so amazing and such a huge part of history, but more than that, why he's the foundation of what we do here at Revolution every single week, is because of what we're going to talk about tonight. Because his life gets to this point where he's coming into this city of Jerusalem, and he has this plan for where he's going to go and what he's going to do. And it's ultimately going to end with him dying in his death. And what he does with those moments and why he does that in particular is what we're going to talk about tonight. So Jesus has been walking around with the disciples, right? He's been doing all these really cool things. He's been saying all these really cool things. And all that was awesome and fun, like we talked about last week. But then he gets to the end of his life this last week, these last few hours of his life, and we're going to kind of recount those hours. Because typically what somebody does with their last few hours are pretty important, especially if they know they're coming, right? Like, if you knew you only had 5 hours to live or something, what would you do with those 5 hours? I'm guessing you wouldn't take a nap. You'd be like, you know what, I'm kind of tired. I'm just going to nap for about a half hour. Like, dude, you have 5 hours, like, and you're done. So you're probably going to try to do the most important things you can think to do, like go tell certain people that you love them, like go skydiving if you've always wanted to do that. I don't know if you could do that in 5 hours, but you would try to do stuff that, like, you feel like is a really big deal, really important, right? If you had a huge fight, like you've been not talking to someone for years, like you maybe trying to make up with them or something because you're about to not have any other chances to do that. So these last few hours of Jesus's life, it's the same kind of thing. He knows this is coming to the end, and he's using these moments on purpose. And the way these things unfold are on purpose, and he allows them to happen. Because we got to remember, Jesus is also who? God. Yeah, he's God. He's not just some normal dude. He's God. He can do anything. He even says at one point that we're going to talk about here in a second that, hey, I could have legions of angels here at any moment. And legions is not something we normally say, right? It's not like you roll through the halls at school. You're like, I got my legions. What? That's like thousands and thousands of people. And Jesus said, I could have thousands and thousands of angels at my side to fight for me and do whatever I want at any point. And he never does any of that. So apparently he didn't want to do that. So we're going to talk a little bit about why tonight. So we're going to march through Luke chapter 22 and Luke chapter 23. You don't have to follow along with me because we're going to be going rapid fire. But I'm going to start just throwing these things at you and kind of recounting his life up until the end, okay? So Luke chapter 22, verses 7 and 8, it says, then came the day of unleavened bread in which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. Jesus sent Peter and John saying, go and make preparations for us to eat the Passover. This is the thing called the Last Supper. You've maybe seen famous paintings with this. Maybe you've picked up on the fact that's what we celebrate when we do communion in a church service with the bread and the juice, right? That's celebrating this, remembering this. This ceremony that they were doing when they're remembering the Passover meal. And this is happening with him and his disciples. So they're getting ready to have literally, it's why is it called Last Supper? Anybody want to take a stab at that? Yeah. Yes, yeah, the Last Supper he ate. It's the last time he eats specifically the Passover meal, but it's the last time he eats with his disciples like this. So they're going, they're getting ready, and then we skip down a few verses, and this is what it says. And he took the bread, and he gave thanks, and he broke it, and he gave it to them, saying, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after the supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you." Okay, now remember again, Jesus is alive, he's there, and he's saying these things about the bread and the juice, right, the wine. Does that make any sense to the disciples? Like, this is my body broken for you. You know, it's given for you. This is my blood. It's like, Jesus, what are you talking about? Did you make the bread with your skin? Is this wine really your blood? This is really weird, dude. Like, it doesn't make sense to them yet because it hasn't happened yet. But he's continuing to prepare his disciples. This is coming. This is coming. And it even goes into why it's coming right there. He's foreshadowing. Hey, this is why this is happening. This, I have to give myself up for you. But they're not getting it. It's not clicking yet. Skip ahead some more verses. And it says this in verses 47 and 48. While he was still speaking, a crowd came up, and the man who was called Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. He approached Jesus to kiss him, but Jesus asked him, "Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?" Jesus is hanging out with his disciples and talking with them, and then these guards walk up, led by one of his disciples, one of the guys that's been following him around, one of his friends, and they're coming up with torches and clubs, and you can tell they're in trouble. You know when like the teacher or the principal or something walk into the class and everybody just kind of like, you can tell they mean business? Like someone's about to get ISS, you know? So is that still a thing? In school suspension? Just making sure. All right. And then there's OSS. You don't know what's about to happen. You know somebody's about to get in trouble though. They walk in and everybody's like, that's kind of what's happening here. Judas walks up with these guards. Jesus is talking to his disciples. Everybody sees who's coming and why they're coming just based on how they look and their demeanor. And everybody's kind of like, and some of the disciples like take off. They're scared. They're like, I hope they're not coming for me. They jet, man. They're like Usain Bolt. Anybody get that? Jamaican runner? Okay, just making sure. So Jesus doesn't move. Peter doesn't move. Peter, like, takes his sword out and cuts the dude's ear off. Jesus picks it up, puts it back on. We talked about that last week. He tells Peter to stop, but he stays there. But the dude is being betrayed by his friend. Like, he's being arrested right now because of his friend. Have you ever felt betrayed before? Like, a friend stabbed you in the back, right? Went behind your back, said something to somebody they should have never said. Jesus feels your pain. He was literally arrested because a friend went behind his back and turned him in for doing nothing. So we keep skipping ahead. Verse 52, said, Jesus said to the chief priests, he's been arrested, right? And the officers of the temple guard and the elders who had come to him, "Am I leading a rebellion that you have come with swords and clubs?" So he's like forcefully arrested, okay? It's not like they're just like, "Hey, Jesus, we're going to need you to come with us for some questioning." No, this like armed guards are arresting this guy and treating him like a violent criminal. Let's skip ahead some more. It says, the men who were guarding Jesus began mocking and beating him. They blindfolded him and demanded, "Prophesy, who hit you?" And they said many other insulting things to him. Anybody ever been insulted? I don't care how cool you are. You've all been insulted. I don't care how cool you think you are. Like, all of us have been insulted. Some of us more than others. But Jesus, Son of God, perfect human being, never done anything wrong in his life, is being punched. I don't know if you've ever been punched before. I'm talking like punched, not like just a little, like knocked out punch. Like, he's getting punched hard, blindfolded, and then dude's being like, "Hey, who hit you? Prophesy." If you're like, what does that mean? Prophesy is a biblical gift where people can have wisdom kind of beyond themselves to be able to tell you something. And so they're like, "Hey, who hit you? Who hit you?" They're mocking God right now. I'm gonna throw something out that might hit you a little bit. Anybody ever in here mock God before? I'm guessing probably all of us in some way have done that before. I don't think any of us have punched God in the face or said anything quite like this to him. But sometimes what we do might be mocking God. But these guys are straight up doing it to his face, like literally punching his face and saying things to his face and continuing to just insult this guy. Now, sometimes when you see stuff like that happen to people, there's a little part of you inside that's like, he had it coming. She had it coming. Like, she kind of, or he kind of deserves it. Is that true of Jesus, though? Like, did he have it coming? Like, how dare you heal that person that was dead? How dare you help that person that's never been able to see anything in their whole life be able to see now? How dare you talk to that lady everybody judged and thought was a terrible person, and you actually talked to her and ate with her? You're a horrible person, Jesus. I'm going to make fun of you now. Have you ever seen somebody get made fun of at school for doing the right thing? Yep. So here's the thing. I hope you're starting to see Jesus is going through things that all of us have seen and go through. This is the darkness we've been talking about. The darkness in our world, the darkness in our own lives. Jesus is continuing to shine amongst it, but it's everywhere, man. It's all over the place. It's all over these last few moments of Jesus' life. It's also in our moments every single day, at school, at home, wherever. So we keep looking at what's happening in Jesus' life before the end of it. He's been mocked, he's been beaten, he's been arrested. And then you get this, right? He's brought in front of other people. His own people, like Jewish people, are saying this. They said, but with loud shouts, they insisted and insistently demanded that he be crucified. And their shouts prevailed. So Pilate decided to grant their demand. This man has been beaten. He's been yelled at. He's been mocked. He's been sent to different rulers to try to decide what they're going to do with him. And then finally, the governor at the time is like, hey, I can't find anything wrong with this guy. I'm just going to beat him up and send him on his way. They're like, no. Kill him. Like, no, we're not going to release him. You need to kill this guy. And not just kill him, you need to crucify him. Crucifying him was like the most humiliating way you could die, or at least among the top ways you could die in the most humiliating ways. And so they're like, hey, this is how we want to do it. You need to crucify him. He can't live. And they're all chanting this. It's like the worst case of a group of people bullying somebody that you've ever experienced at school, where everybody's just kind of piling onto this one person. If you've ever seen that, this is like worst case scenario, because they're not just like making fun of Jesus. They're like, ha, 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 we're going to kill you. Like, this is intense. Now again, who is Jesus again? He's God. Has Jesus done anything wrong? Has Jesus loved people? Has he forgiven people? Has he served people? These are the things he's done, and this is what's happening to him right now. So if I'm Jesus, if you're Jesus, and you had the potential of just saying, hey, angels, I need you to handle my business. And you could have an army of angels come down and just make an example of all these people that are doing this to you. If I'm Jesus, thank goodness I'm not, I would probably have done that. I'd be like, yo, Gabriel, take care of this guy. Take care of all these guys. Because he could have done that, but he never does any of that. He just takes it. So, we see him going through all of this, and then he's demanded to be killed. So, we skip down a few more verses, and it said, when they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him there, along with the criminals. One on his right, one on his left. Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing. And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, hey, you save others, let him save himself if he is God's Messiah, the chosen one. So he has to carry his own cross up this hill And then he gets nailed to it, not just by himself, but with common, just normal criminals who have actually done stuff wrong. And so he's dying with these people up on this hill, and then people are still mocking him. You know, like when somebody gets punished to a point where you're like, okay, that's enough. They've had enough. You would think they would be at that point now. I mean, the dude is nailed to a cross. And when I say nailed, I don't mean like he's just holding on up there. Like literally nailed to a cross. Like he's up there and they're still hurling insults at him. They're like, hey, if you're the Son of God, you can just come on down. And he stays, but he doesn't just stay. He's like, Father, forgive them. The people that are insulting him, he's asking God to forgive them. Why? He says, because they don't even know what they're doing. They don't even get what they're doing right now. They don't understand who I am. They're missing it. They're not seeing the light right now. They're not getting what is right in front of them. So then we get to the final moment. And it says this, it was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m, for the sun had stopped shining. And the curtain in the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. When he had said this, he breathed his last. So Bailey, bring up this light for me again. So we have Jesus, this shining light in the darkness, right? He's being beaten, insulted, arrested, nailed to a cross, and he's still asking God to forgive these people. And so finally he gets to this moment where he decides to give up his life, give up his last breath. And this light of the world goes out. And not only spiritually and figuratively, but literally, like the earth went dark, the sun stopped shining. It says the earth quaked in this moment because we lost the light that had been sent into the world. So then the question becomes, well, why? Why? Like, why? And it might even make you mad. Like, it might make you angry. Like, if I was there, I would have taken some Roman folks and I would have let them have it. I would have, like, kneed them. I would have kicked them. I would have bit them. I would have played dirty. It doesn't matter. I'm going to take them out. How can they do that to Jesus? He didn't do anything wrong. It's kind of like when you see somebody getting bullied that doesn't deserve to get bullied, which is everyone. And you're like, oh, and you want to do something about it. You might get that feeling when you hear this story about Jesus. But Jesus lets it happen. He gives up his life on purpose. He lets this terrible stuff happen to him. This pain happen to him. Why? We see the answer a little bit later. In Romans, it says, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. In spite of people hurling insults at him and nailing him to the cross without anything having deserved that, Jesus died for us. In spite of the fact that he did nothing but serve and help people while he was on the planet, people still wanted to kill him. But he still let it happen. He gave up his life. So this sin that we're talking about, this is not just their sin. The people that insulted him to his face then and like punched him then and like were being the people that caused this to happen in the moment. This is all of our sin. This is what you did last year. This is what you did this week. This is what you're going to do next week. This is what I did 5 years ago. This is what I did last week. This is what I did just today. All those things that we've done that are sin, that we just know are wrong, that are against what God's called us to, Jesus died because of those things. It's the only thing that makes sense, because he didn't die for his sins, did he? He didn't have any. So why would Jesus let this stuff happen? The only reason he would let it happen is because of what we just read in that verse, because God loves us. He loves you. He loves me. In spite of the fact that we mess up, in spite of the fact that we sin, in spite of the fact that we make these terrible, dumb decisions, God loves us. And we know this is our sin too, because we look at Romans 6 and it says this, that the death he died for sin once and for all. Once for all. No one else needs to die. No one else needs to take this punishment on, because Jesus took it on for you and for me, because he's the only one who didn't deserve it. And so my hope and prayer, I was telling the leaders this earlier, is that we would feel the weight of our sin. That it was our sin that was why Jesus died. That doesn't mean you killed Jesus. It doesn't mean I killed Jesus. But it is because of our sin that he had to die, and that he chose to die. But what's awesome about that is because he took that punishment, because he took that death for us, and it enables us to have that weight of our sin taken off of us, because it was put onto him. And we know it's for us too, because it's once for all. Once for all, do you know what all means? I had a Bible teacher tell me in college when I was going through school, he said, all means all, and that's all means. All means all. Like, all means you. It means me. It means people thousands of years ago. It means people hundreds and thousands of years in the future. It means all. It means everybody. Jesus died for everyone and every sin. And so for us now, here, my hope, my prayer is that as we're just a few weeks away from Easter, we would let God's love just kind of wash over us. That the weight of our sin, we would feel it, but we would also feel the fact that it's been lifted off of us and put onto Jesus. And that, yes, he died. He died for it. But he died for it because he loves us. He loves you. He loves me. He loved us so much that he was willing to go through all that, even though he didn't deserve it. So God, thank you so much for the fact that you did that, that you sent Jesus, and that Jesus allowed himself to go through that pain, go through that death on a cross, so that we could have our sin put onto him and the punishment for that sin given to him, because he's the only one that could take it. Anyone else on that cross would have deserved it, except for him. So because he did it, because he took it, he takes all of ours. So God, thank you for that. Thank you for loving us that much. Help us and remind us of that love throughout the week and the weeks to come leading up to Easter, God. We love you, and we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.